hearings possibly. Who knows if they will continue for the Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett as she goes from one Republican senator's office to another with White House staffers. White House staffers going back and forth who've been with President Trump numerous times. What this could mean, and the oldest member of the Senate is the second in command of the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, and that's Dianne Feinstein. Will these hearings be put off? What about Amy Coney Barrett's own family, who didn't wear masks when President Trump introduced her last week?
There's been a huge amount of reckless endangerment, there's no doubt. And I think that if we were following the proper protocol, the Senate would not be able to meet, and therefore the confirmation would not be able to happen. You know, I think we should be thinking also of the working people who have been exposed by this administration recklessly in the past few days, the drivers, the catering workers, so many people without their consent have been exposed, just as in the country. Think about the thousands of meat processing plant workers who were ordered to work under extremely unsafe conditions by this president because he believed that bacon was an essential service. So so many people have been endangered by his policies.
We're going to have to end it there. And, of course, we'll continue to cover the story. The Miami Herald reporting that Chris Wallace notes members of the First Family waved off the offer of masks from members of the Cleveland Clinic once they sat down in the hall to watch the debate. That does it for the show. Naomi Klein,
you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Commissioner Hardesty outlines changes she'd make to the Portland Police Bureau. Alleged Proud Boy Alan Swinney pleads not guilty to 12 criminal charges stemming from Portland rallies. And a lawsuit has been filed against Pacific Power over the Santiam Canyon fires. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 2nd, 2020. I'm Nat Moon. Portland Commissioner Joanne Hardesty has drafted a plan outlining how she would change the Portland Police Bureau if she is named police commissioner. The announcement comes despite the fact that Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler has said that he intends to remain in that role. According to the Oregonian, Hardesty's detailed plan includes dozens of steps that would be taken over a 90-day timeline. Citing frustration with Chief Chuck Lavelle's actions and tactics during the recent demonstrations, Hardesty said that one of the first steps would be his removal as chief and the start of a national search for a new head of the PPB. An interim chief would be appointed while the search was underway, and the community input process would be included. In order to reduce the confrontational nature of demonstrations, Hardesty proposed requiring PPB officers to display their names on their uniforms and not respond to demonstrators in riot gear. She said that on her first day as police commissioner, she would visit the PPB Incident Command Center during protests, revise PPB guidelines on interaction with demonstrators, and implement changes to the Bureau's public information plan. Other steps would include a hiring freeze to understand how best to use existing resources, ride-alongs with officers on patrol duty, a reevaluation of police recruiting practices, and the establishment of a new internal review process with independent audits and a review of past audits. Longer term, Hardesty plans a review of the PPB's budget and a deeper dive into the effectiveness and outcomes of police specialty units. She said that she has reviewed the draft with members of her staff and the staff of other council members, but not yet with the other council members or the mayor. Mayoral candidate Sarah Iannarone has stated that she will name Joanne Hardesty Portland Police Commissioner if she is elected mayor. In a related story, Portland Commissioner Joanne Hardesty has demanded that the deputation of Portland police officers be rescinded immediately. Her comments came in response to the news that members of the PPB's rapid response team will maintain their status as deputy federal marshals through the end of this year and may be renewed for 2021. The officers had been deputized as federal marshals in advance of last Saturday's Proud Boy rally in North Portland. In a statement, Hardesty said, quote, "This is a clear attempt by the federal government to take over our local police force, circumvent DA Schmidt's protest arrest policy, and threaten everyone's right to free speech and assembly." U.S. prosecutors can charge protesters accused of attacking a deputized officer with a federal crime, which frequently includes harsher punishments than state or local guidelines. On Tuesday, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler also requested the designation be withdrawn, but on Wednesday, Oregon State Police Superintendent Travis Hampton reminded the mayor that state police officers were also deputized as federal marshals and defended the deputization of PPB officers. In a statement, Hampton said, quote, "OSP troopers will not serve the city of Portland in any capacity that needlessly endangers them or their colleagues. I call upon Oregon's U.S. attorney to leave this measure of accountability in place for all agency crowd control units serving in Portland." Oregon Governor Kate Brown is leading a coalition of governors to protect voter rights and voter access in the upcoming general election. In addition to Oregon, the coalition includes the governors of California, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, Nevada, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. In announcing the coalition, Brown noted that the pandemic has changed the way Americans live and work, saying, quote, "Our nation faces an unprecedented challenge to protect the health and lives of millions. But in the face of such a fight, we cannot let our constitutional right to free and fair elections suffer." She went on to say that the governors would take the necessary steps to make sure that people don't have to choose between their health and their right to vote. Brown said that the governors have pledged to ensure that the right to vote is safe, accessible, and secure, that electors will vote as they are pledged, and that allegations of voter disenfranchisement or voter fraud will be thoroughly investigated. In some Oregon counties, election workers are available to go to the homes of people with disabilities if they need assistance completing their ballots. For more on the story, here's Diane Bernard of the Oregon News Service.
Advocates for people living with disabilities say Oregon has taken some major steps to ensure that everyone has the help they need navigating the voting process, even during a pandemic. Tom Stenson with Disability Rights Oregon says the state, with its all mail-in ballot system, is now allowing election workers to visit nursing homes and long-term care facilities to help folks fill in their ballots. This ensures that there'll be fewer mistakes that could otherwise keep a person's vote from being counted.
One thing that we learned well in Oregon is that it's really, really important to educate people on exactly what the procedures are in your state so that there isn't a high error rate with people not signing forms or not putting them in the right envelope.
He says it's always been difficult for people living with disabilities to vote, and officials are concerned the pandemic is making the process harder for some. There's more voting information on the Disability Rights Oregon website. Mail-in voting can be especially challenging for people with visual impairments or those who don't have the motor skills to be able to write, Stenson points out. He says county clerk's offices have options to help, including offering an accessible electronic version of the ballot that allows the voter to use software that reads it out loud.
People can also even order a large print ballot. So if somebody has low vision, they can get a large print ballot that they can view with their glasses or magnifier, whatever they use that helps them read.
It's estimated that more than 38 million Americans with disabilities will be eligible to vote in the November election. This includes 7 million with visual disabilities. Stenson points out that if even small numbers of these voters are excluded, it could impact the election. For Oregon News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
Alleged Proud Boy Alan Swinney has pleaded not guilty to 12 criminal charges related to his participation in two separate right-wing rallies in downtown Portland. Swinney was arrested by Portland police on Wednesday on charges of assault, attempted assault, unlawful use of a weapon, unlawful use of mace, menacing, and pointing a firearm at another person. The arrest followed a sealed indictment that was filed on September 11th by the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. The indictment charges that on August 15th, Swinney allegedly injured an individual with a paintball gun and unlawfully discharged mace. It goes on to charge that on August 22nd, Swinney allegedly pointed a gun at another person in a crowd of protesters during a Proud Boys rally downtown. In addition to the criminal charges he faces, Swinney is also the defendant in a $1.2 million civil lawsuit resulting from the incidents. Swinney is a self-described member of the Proud Boys and has a Proud Boy tattoo on his arm. The all-male group calls themselves Western Chauvinists and has been designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The arrest of Swinney came the day after Donald Trump refused to denounce white supremacists during Tuesday night's presidential debate with Joe Biden. Rather than denounce them, Trump told them to, quote, stand back and stand by before immediately attacking Antifa and claiming that most of the violence was from the left wing. Many Proud Boys immediately adopted the motto, quote, standing down and standing by. A class action lawsuit has been filed against Pacific Power, claiming that their power lines ignited wildfires in Santiam Canyon. The suit was brought by three Northwest law firms claiming that Pacific Power and its parent company, Pacific Corp, negligently failed to shut down power lines during high winds in the area. The utility has previously said that it doesn't know if its lines caused any fires, and fire officials have not yet cited any official causes. But a September report from the Northwest Interagency Fire Coordination Center said that downed power lines were responsible for 13 separate fires in Santiam Canyon, and the lawsuit appears to be based on that report. As of Thursday, the Beachy Creek fire had consumed nearly 200,000 acres and was still less than 60% contained. The suit names Janine James and Robert Colbert as lead plaintiffs. The couple lost their home of 17 years when fire swept through Lyons last month. The suit claims that high winds brought down power lines that sparked the blaze, saying, quote, these fires burned over hundreds of thousands of acres, destroyed thousands of structures, killed people, and upended countless lives. The suit is similar to one brought against Pacific Gas and Electric around the Camp Fire in 2018. PG&E lost this suit and was forced into bankruptcy as a result. The company pleaded guilty to 84 counts of manslaughter and was fined $4 million and agreed to pay $13.5 billion in cash and stock to settle claims resulting from the suit. KGW and the Oregonian will host a televised mayoral debate next Thursday, October 8th. The incumbent, Ted Wheeler, and his challenger, Sarah Iannarone, will take questions from KGW's Laurel Porter and Everton Bailey from the Oregonian. The two candidates participated in a virtual Zoom debate last night hosted by the Black Caucus of the Democratic Party of Oregon. The debate centered on equity, social justice, and public safety. Iannarone called Wheeler out for the recently discovered $150,000 loan he made to his campaign in violation of existing campaign finance laws. Wheeler replied saying, quote, cheap shot, move on. The city auditor's office has said they will not enforce limits to candidates funding their campaigns at this time. Last night, Wheeler promised to take the issue of federal deputation of Portland Police Bureau's rapid response team to the Supreme Court if necessary. The mayor called for the reversal of last week's emergency deputation of officers on Tuesday. U.S. Attorney Billy Williams has refused the request. Next Thursday's debate will air at 7 p.m. on KGW TV, the KGW app, OregonLive.com, and YouTube. Members of the public are encouraged to submit video questions to candidates via an email link on KGW's site. During Tuesday night's presidential debate, Donald Trump claimed that a Portland sheriff supported his heavy-handed tactics in Portland, but so far none of the area's top law enforcement officials has been willing to fess up to that. Multnomah County Sheriff Mike Reese immediately refuted Trump's claim, saying, quote, as the Multnomah County Sheriff, I have never supported Donald Trump and I will never support him. Washington County Sheriff Pat Garrett and PPB Chief Chuck Lavelle have also denied endorsing the president, as has the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office and the Portland Police Association. And in a somewhat surprising disclosure, the Oregonian reported that campaign finance records show that local police have donated more money to Democrats than Republicans in 2020. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up next at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight, we can expect clear skies with an overnight low of 55 degrees. Tomorrow, we'll see morning clouds give way to a sunny day with an afternoon high in the mid-70s. On this day in 1967, Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice, was sworn in. Today's quote is from Justice Marshall, who said, quote, "When you see wrong or inequality or injustice, speak out, because this is your country. Make it, protect it, pass it on." Early this morning, the President and First Lady announced they had tested positive for COVID-19. The confirmation followed the news that they were getting tested due to exposure to close advisor Hope Hicks, who tested positive on Thursday morning. Stock markets fell worldwide immediately following the announcement. Contact tracers are hard at work identifying and notifying anyone in contact with the President over the past week. The president and his family rode on Air Force One with Hicks to Tuesday's debate, but it has not been confirmed whether the president contracted the virus from Hicks or if the two have a common source. The Trump family reportedly refused to wear masks at the event, despite requirements that all attendees do so. Democratic candidate Joe Biden, who stood not far from the president during Tuesday's debate, tested negative for the virus today, as did Vice President Mike Pence. Barron, the president's 14-year-old son, has also tested negative. The president is said to have seemed lethargic at a golfing fundraiser he held in Bedminster, New Jersey, yesterday morning. He has since developed mild symptoms of fever, cough, and congestion, according to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Despite news of Hicks's positive diagnosis, the president was in close contact with about 100 people during yesterday's fundraiser, and critics questioned his decision to continue with the event. New Jersey Governor Philip Murphy urged anyone who attended the event to self-quarantine and get tested as soon as possible. Trump is currently isolating at the White House. Campaign events have either been postponed or moved to virtual spaces. Earlier today, he took an experimental drug developed by biotech company Regeneron, along with a mixture of daily vitamins. A memo from his doctor says Trump is, quote, "fatigued, but in good spirits." The state of Texas has decided to allow only one ballot drop box per county in a state where the largest county measures over 500 square miles. With more on that story and others, it's Lily Bolke with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania tested positive for COVID-19 last night after planning to quarantine following the news top aide Hope Hicks also tested positive. The fallout from this week's debate continues. Former Montana governor and Republican National Committee Chair Mark Rasko endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden, saying it was, quote, "a matter of conscience." Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel announced felony charges against two conservative operatives who have a history of staging hoaxes to defame prominent Democrats.
There were robocalls that were made to residents in the city of Detroit recently with a lot of wrong information.
In Detroit and other cities in swing states with large Black populations, robocalls threatened people with arrest and forced vaccination to dissuade them from voting. The calls falsely claimed that requesting an absentee ballot would allow voters' personal information to be shared with creditors, law enforcement, or even ICE.
None of that is true. When you register to vote absentee, it is for the purpose of you receiving an absentee ballot so that you can vote absentee, the end.
In the Senate, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was able to get the chamber to vote on whether they would vote on a bill to bar the Justice Department from arguing to repeal the Affordable Care Act in front of the Supreme Court next month.
This vote which I was fortunate enough to obtain, will show America which party stands with protecting Americans' health care and protections for pre-existing conditions, and which party opposes it.
The vote failed, but six Republicans joined the Democrats, five of them facing close re-elections this year. The effort to stop the DOJ comes as Democrats worry that Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett, if confirmed, will join the conservative majority and rule against the ACA. Though President Trump has maintained that his nominee's position on Roe v. Wade isn't known, investigative British newspaper The Guardian surfaced an advertisement she signed in 2006, calling for the landmark case to be overturned. Here's Vice Presidential candidate Kamala Harris.
Judge Barrett has a long record of opposing abortion and reproductive rights.
Barrett hasn't publicly discussed her longtime affiliation with anti-abortion charismatic Christian group People of Praise, but research into the Internet Archive, Wayback Machine, by the Associated Press shows the group has scrubbed numerous articles and photos of her and her family. And Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott told his state's counties they can have just one ballot drop box each, though some counties cover thousands of square miles. The Democratic leader, Gilberto Inyosa, called it, quote, blatant voter suppression. Texas is already one of the five states that don't allow fear of contracting COVID-19 to vote absentee. Anthony Gutierrez is with Common Cause Texas.
I definitely feel like Texas has to be considered among the contenders for the leaders in the country when it comes to like erecting barriers to the ballot box and to registration.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening.
Indigenous cyclists are on a mission to promote mental health. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of Indigenous men are cycling through Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico promoting mental wellness. Wyoming Public Radio's Jacquehe Black has more.
Identifying as a Black man and a member of the Haida Nation, Damon Bell Holter has seen firsthand how men of color often don't seek help for mental illness. He says one barrier is a lack of diversity among mental health care providers.
What happened was I started working on my personal, like, my healing and seeing a therapist a couple years ago, and I was, like, getting matched up with, like, you know, honestly, you know, white people, you know?
But another problem is the cycle of silence and stigma surrounding mental health. That's why Bell Holter is leading a group of men on this more than 800-mile cycling trip. They started on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming and finished up in Albuquerque this week. Along the way, they encouraged men of color to speak out about their mental health and seek the help they need. The group is also raising money for mental health initiatives in Indigenous communities. For National Native News, I'm Jacquehe Black.
Nevada lawmakers expanded mail-in voting due to COVID-19, which includes protections for tribal communities. A federal judge recently dismissed a lawsuit over the law. Many homes on reservations have non-standard mail service, and residents have to travel to a postal provider to get mail. Voting advocates say there are also other challenges Native voters face. Roz Brown has more.
Jacqueline DeLeon with the Native American Rights Fund says Indigenous people live much farther from polling locations than non-natives.
It's much more difficult than the average American can conceive of to vote in Indian country. Native Americans have a decrease in post office hours. They also have their ballots travel further.
DeLeon adds that fewer transportation options, a lack of internet access, and other socioeconomic factors also play a role in whether Indigenous people vote. She says it's not uncommon for Native Americans to travel up to 200 miles to register to vote or reach their polling place. In August, Nevada lawmakers expanded mail-in voter laws to address challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Assembly Bill 4 allows non-family members to safely return a ballot for one another in the upcoming election. It also provides mechanisms for tribes to request early on-reservation polling locations. DeLeon says prior to Nevada's vote-by-mail primary in June, more than 90% of the Indigenous population voted in person. I'm Roz Brown.
The vice president of the Navajo Nation, Myron Leiser, has expressed his well wishes on social media for President Trump and the First Lady after they tested positive for COVID-19. Leiser's an outspoken Trump supporter. Leiser took his own COVID-19 test this week after traveling to Washington, D.C. for a prayer event. In a virtual town hall Thursday night, Leiser defended his travel, saying he understands concerns. The Navajo Nation remains under emergency orders, including 57-hour weekend lockdowns. Lizer says it was a one-time thing, adding he would do it again to pray for the nation.
I did go in and get tested because of all the, concern that was out there. But, you know, last week, Tuesday, I did mention that I had just returned from the D.C. area praying for our nation. And, you know, what a time it was to be given that opportunity and the heavy, heavy responsibility of praying.
Lizer was seen at the event not wearing a mask or social distancing. Critics have taken to social media to express their dismay with the Navajo Nation vice president. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The ACLU has filed a motion of contempt order against the city of Seattle over the continued use of so-called less lethal munitions against Black Lives Matter protesters. With more on that, here's Lily Bolke with the Public News Service.
For the second time, the ACLU of Washington has filed a motion of contempt against the city of Seattle on behalf of Black Lives Matter, Seattle King County, in a lawsuit over police response to protests. A federal judge this summer barred Seattle officers from using blast balls, pepper spray, foam-tipped projectiles, and other crowd control weapons, with the exception of responding to a specific imminent threat of personal injury or property damage. But Molly Tack Hooper with the ACLU of Washington says that order hasn't been followed.
SPD will decide at some point, either very quickly or after a little while, that the protest is no longer lawful. They'll declare it to be a riot or an unlawful assembly, and then they'll start using these less lethal weapons to push the whole crowd back.
The first motion of contempt in late July led to a preliminary injunction, and the city agreed to expand the restrictions on the less lethal weapons. This second motion alleges the city has failed to take the necessary steps to comply. Tack Hooper says one of those critical restrictions is that police have to give a dispersal order that's audible to everyone in the area before using force. And they have to give protesters, legal observers, medics, and journalists a meaningful opportunity to get out of the way.
We've seen SPD actually block off side streets so that people who do want to leave this crowd after the police start using these really scary weapons can't do so.
She says they're now waiting for the court to respond to the motion. Tack Hooper adds it's crucial that people have the power to protest without fear of violence from their city's law enforcement agencies. For Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke.
Manufacturing jobs in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin have been in decline since before the start of the coronavirus pandemic. For more on that, here's Andrea Sears with the Public News Service.
A new study shows the manufacturing sector in Pennsylvania and three other key swing states had gone into a decline before the COVID-19 pandemic. The analysis, performed by experts at the Century Foundation, Policy Matters Ohio, and the Groundwork Collaborative, looks at job and wage growth since 2000. According to Stephen Hertzenberg, executive director of the Keystone Research Center, in 2019, manufacturing jobs in the rest of the country were growing, while in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, they were shrinking.
We haven't seen the rebound in manufacturing. We haven't seen any recovery in manufacturing wages. There's been a lot of overpromising and a lot of under-delivery.
He says manufacturing jobs in three of the four states grew faster from 2010 to 2016 during the Obama administration than during the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. For workers with a high school diploma or less, manufacturing jobs generally pay more than other kinds of employment. Hertzenberg points out that while the margin has declined over the years, manufacturing jobs still give workers an extra boost.
Which is why manufacturing jobs are important to economic opportunity, and our region, our state, suffers because we don't really have a manufacturing policy.
He says the decline in the manufacturing wage premium was due in part to union busting and both foreign and domestic outsourcing of jobs to areas with lower pay. Hertzenberg says policies such as the trade war with China and trade deals that don't protect workers' rights or wages have contributed to the decline in manufacturing jobs, while policies that push wages up, invest in workers' skills and innovation can turn it around.
The outline of a real manufacturing policy that would be good for the country's competitiveness, but also good for workers and families in our region, is not complicated. We just don't have that right now.
He emphasizes that manufacturing has long been the economic backbone of Pennsylvania and the Midwest economies, and it can thrive again. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 2nd, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell and Samantha Lau. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Diane Bernard, Lily Bolke, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Andrea Sears. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon.